Buddhist summer school, Saturday morning, 27th August 1977. There are occasions when the members of the Buddha's Sangha met together and talked about various things. On one occasion, they met at the hermitage of the Brahmin named Rammaka. And the monks were talking about the Buddha himself. On another occasion, the monks were talking in this manner. They said, "Look at the senior monks of our order. They are reverenced, they are honored, they receive fame, they receive alms, food, and robes, and so on. Let us also be monks of the order. We too shall receive food and clothes and reverence and honor from the people." And of course, on various other occasions, they were talking of other subjects. Now, the Buddha sometimes comes and joins them. And on this occasion, when they were at the hermitage of the Brahmin Rammaka, it was Ananda who led the Lord to them. And in the usual way, when he heard from outside that the talk had finished, and he coughed and knocked on the bar of the door, and the monks opened the door. Then the Lord opened, having entered the hermitage, sat down on the appointed seat, and he asks the monks, "What were you talking about? The talk which I interrupted." And the monks answer, "Lord, our talk that was interrupted was about the Lord himself, and then he arrived." And the Lord says, "It were good, monks, that when young men of family such as you, who have gone forth from home into homelessness out of faith, are gathered together, that you talk about Dhamma. When you are gathered together, there are two things to be done. Either talk about Dhamma, or observe the Aryan silence." And this comes in various contexts. There is that other context in which the monks were talking about being reverenced and so forth. Still another context in which they are discussing what is the chief craft in the country. Is it making this, making that, etc., etc.? And this is what the Lord says to them on every occasion. He says, "It is not seemly for you," note that, "it is not seemly for you," this comes in the Udana, "for you to talk such talk. When you sit together in conclave, one of two things is to be done. Either talk in accordance with Dhamma or observe the Aryan silence. And in the original text, you have that same sentence. Dhammi va katha ariyo va tunhi bhavo. Katha means talk. Dhammi on Dhamma. Va is or, either this or that. Or the ariyo tunhi bhavo, the Aryan silence. And it is very interesting to note how in various religious disciplines of the world you find either the same or a similar teaching given. Eckhart, for instance, writes, "The godly man talks readily about God." St. Teresa says, "How can your tongues be better employed when you are together than in praising God who has given us so much cause for it?" The idea, the atmosphere is the same. What is the Aryan silence? Ariyo tunhi bhavo. The commentary to the Majjhima, the second volume, says, it is the second jhana. This is the Aryan silence. And in the Samyutta Nikaya, at the Jeta Grove, in Anathapindika's park, where they frequently met, the great disciple Moggallana says to the monks, "When a monk, by allaying initial and discursive thought, his mind subjectively tranquilized and fixed on one point, enters into and abides in the second jhana, which is devoid of initial and discursive thought, is born of concentration, full of zest and ease, then this is what we call the Aryan silence." See the important point there? It is the going down of initial and discursive thought, vittaka and vichara. Vittaka means more or less musing and coming back to the point on which to which you are attending. And vichara is the clear flow of thought, logical thought, which is associated with that. All that subsides completely. You are fully awake, but the brain has stopped its chatter. This does not mean that the mind has gone to sleep. We have to distinguish clearly between mind and brain. The brain, the concretest expression of universal mind in our living bodies, which acts as a computer, acts as a mechanical synthesizer, that has stopped acting on its own. It is quiet. Then mind in its fullness comes into play. The brain then is purely the instrument of mind. And in that state, there is the beginning of the Aryan silence. Now this Aryan silence is given out more fully in the Anguttara Nikaya. In the 5th volume, this is how the passage goes. Now the Venerable Ananda came to see the Exalted One. Seated at one side, he asked, "Pray, sir, may it be that a monk's winning of concentration is of such a sort that in earth he is unaware of earth, in water unaware of water, in fire unaware of fire, in air unaware of it, in the realm of unbounded space unaware of it, in the realm of infinite intellection," translates vijnana as intellection here, "in the realm of nothingness, in the realm of neither perception nor non-perception, unaware of it. That in this world he is unaware of this world, in the world beyond unaware of the world beyond, that whatsoever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, attained, sought after, thought over by mind, of all that he is unaware and yet is conscious." This is an extraordinarily significant question. And the Lord answered, "Ananda, it may be so," meaning it can be so, it is so. "A monk's winning of concentration may be of such a sort that in earth, air, water, fire, in the different jhanas, right up to the summit of becoming, neither perception nor non-perception, he is unaware of it, and yet is conscious." This is that transcendental awareness, which is the absolute, the complete, the perfect silence, and includes all sound, all change, all disturbance, etc. Very significant. Now it is only man who can realize this. There is no other kingdom, no other creature on this planet who can realize that. So he tells us something of what the word man means, what his potentialities are. And we see the importance of the silence. Ananda goes on, "But sir, in what way may a monk's winning of concentration of such a sort that he is unaware and yet may be conscious?" The word which is translated as concentration is samadhi. Samadhi. This is the full meaning of samadhi. "Herein," Ananda answers the Lord, "a monk is conscious thus. This is the real." this is the best, namely the calming of all the activities, the rejection of every substrate, the ending of craving, the fading of interest, interest in the temporal passing things, stopping. Nirodha is the word there, which is often translated as extinction or destruction. But it isn't destruction or extinction in the sense of complete annihilation, not at all. It is this transmutation which takes place. This is the Nirodha. That which obstructed Nirvana, the light of transcendence itself, that obstruction is out of the situation. Therefore, he ends, stopping and Nirvana. In such a way, Ananda, a monk's winning of concentration may be of such a sort that in earth he is unaware of earth, etc., etc., etc. Of all that he is unaware, and yet at the same time he is conscious. It's an extraordinary statement. Now, something else which is in line with this. This is taken from the greater discourse of the miscellany. It is a conversation between the monk Mahakottita, Kottita the Great, with the Venerable Sariputta. And it is in the form of question and answer. And Kottita questions, what is the difference between a dead man and one absorbed in cessation? The type of consciousness that we were talking of a few moments ago. That he is unaware of all this and yet is conscious. And Sariputta answers, the difference is this, that one who is thus conscious is one in whom the vocal activities, vitakka vichara, initial and discursive thought, is called a vocal activity, activity of speech only. It's not thinking in the real sense, in the profound sense. The vocal activities, vitakka vichara, the mental activities, Sanyavedayita. Sanyavedayita. Feeling and perception as we experience feeling and perception. As well as feeling and perception in a transcendental sense, shall we say an octave above our ordinary perception, they are all stopped. But vitality, the life of the body, heat, go on. And the sense organs are completely purified. That is the one who is in the supreme state. That mode of consciousness, of which the Buddha said, the monk touches nirvana with the body. Most significant statement. Touches nirvana with the body. All the presentations in the great religions of the state of transfiguration mean precisely this. This is transfiguration. So we see that the silence extends beyond the stopping of initial and discursive thought. And it includes the stopping, the nirodha, let us put it this way, which I think will be about the best way in which we can understand it, the complete release out of every conditioned state is realized. The release out of every conditioned state is realized. Whilst you are here, the body is awake, it is fully conscious, you are fully conscious. And that is the ultimate silence. It includes the experiencing of nirvana here now. But the experiencing of nirvana here now is something that comes to an end, because the body must of necessity feed, drink, etc. Therefore that state comes to an end. And the next time when the bhikkhu, the monk, you or I enter that state, there is another experiencing of nirvana. Now you see why nirvana is also designated as anatta. Anatta. We'll talk about atta and anatta sometime and try and be free of the misconceptions which have wrapped themselves around this doctrine of anatta. The negative aspect has been overstressed. Therefore, one loses sight of the totality of reality. All right. So now, I trust we have just some small glimpse of the meaning of the Aryan silence. Now a few words about this stopping of the activities. In another discourse, which is like the Mahavedalla Sutta, there is the Chula, the little Vedalla Sutta, the little discourse on the miscellany, which is really a very much more interesting discourse in certain ways. The nun, Dhammadinna, is being questioned by her ex-husband. She didn't run away from him or anything like that. She desired to live the holy life. The husband consented. He stayed at home, washed the babies and cooked the meals, I suppose. And she went forth to homelessness and became practically the foremost female disciple of the Buddha. And Visakha comes to visit her and asks questions about the Dhamma, in which she tells him vitakka vichara is activity of speech, in and out breathing activity of body, feeling and perception activity of mind. And in the attainment of cessation, the sanya vedayita nirodham, the activity of speech is stopped at the second jhana, the bodily activity is stopped at the fourth jhana. Now that's something I don't understand. If you stop in-breathing and out-breathing, how long can the body survive? I don't know. I have not ever been able to answer that question. And at the actual cessation, beyond the fourth samapatti, beyond the state of neither perception nor non-perception, when the transcendental perceiving and feeling is transcended, there is the complete cessation, the complete silence that is stopped in that state. Now, one emerges into transcendence and then emerges out of it back to one's ordinary condition. One emerges by going deep into the jhanas, the samapattis, and then into the cessation. And one emerges out of those states back to the ordinary everyday physical state. Now consider this phrase, talk on Dhamma or the Aryan silence. As it is actually stated in the teachings, we might think that they are alternatives. Are they alternatives? Consider carefully. Only in a limited sense, they are alternatives. Insofar as one does in the transcending leave behind, which is a slightly misleading phrase actually, but these are the difficulties of language, one leaves behind that out of which one has entered into a deeper depth. And only in that sense they are alternatives. But now note carefully, talk is audible speech. More than one person is involved. Or talk is inaudible speech, one's own thinking process, what we call the thinking process. We are talking, the brain is talking away, chattering away. So you see, there are those two kinds of talk. One may be talking away, vittakka vichara, with respect to the Dhamma, true enough. But in both cases, whether it's audible or inaudible, there is this activity which we call speech. So, talk on Dhamma proceeds from audible speech to inaudible speech when we are thinking about the teachings, and thence to the silencing of speech in the second jhana. But the second jhana is called the Aryan silence, the first step of the Aryan silence. Now, when that talk is stopped, it doesn't mean that the Dhamma activity is stopped. It goes on. The entry into the profounder states is the religious activity. Man's supreme dormant potentiality coming to flower. Hence, the Aryan silence includes and absorbs talk on Dhamma. You should remember this very carefully. So we can understand the true meaning of silence in the religious context. And the religious context is the context of transcendence, which is not a something other over there. It is the totality. It is not something measurable, finite, which undergoes a beginning, proceeding, ending, a birth-death process, but it is that eternal now, the immediate here now, which is spaceless, timeless. Space-time come into being, and therefore finitude, and therefore birth-death, come into being simultaneously with specific manifestation. The conditioned state, jati, also translated birth and rebirth. But avoid thinking in terms of birth and rebirth in connection with all this, because they are very limiting words, and they will always puzzle one. The mind will not be able to become free of limitation if it pictures birth, rebirth, birth, death, rebirth, re-death, rebirth, re-death, and so forth. That is a continuous process in time, which is the process in terms of bondage. You see? Hence, all these theories which come under the words transmigration, metempsychosis, reincarnation, rebirth, are theories which prevent us from becoming aware of the underlying reality. There is an underlying truth, but the truth is so profound, so marvelous, that by using these words, we are held within the prison house of our own mental limitations. So think of it as the conditioned state, which is a much more general term and will include what is specifically called birth, death, the round. Thus, we may perhaps be able to see that in the Aryan silence, the entire Buddha Dhamma could be contained. The Aryan silence contains the entire Buddha Dhamma. It rejects nothing whatsoever. It is inclusive of the totality, the indefinable, immeasurable, nondescript, absolute. And in doing so, all the particular branches or different modes of presentation of the Buddha Dhamma, Theravada, Mahayana, Zen, etc., etc., Vajrayana, all these get included. It's the whole thing, the complete thing. Now, a few words in connection with meditation. Meditation begins in our early stages as a technical practice. We do this, we do that. And especially if we belong to inhabitants of a temperate or a cold climate, we are over fond of doing this, doing that. We get impatient with the talk, as we say. Oh, all that is just airy-fairy thinking. What am I to do about it? The truth is that seeing the truth, which in reality means your whole being becomes that truth, is the totality of action. Because such seeing the truth does not exclude whatever physical action by the body is necessary. It includes the totality of action. Action which is deed of mind, as the Buddha said, speech, which is talk, which is deed of speech, and the physical action, which is deed of body. They are all included. We make the mistake of thinking that if deed of body is not present, then we are not active. That is a mistake. And if there is real seeing the Dhamma, then whatever deed of body is associated with that seeing is a deed which is sure to be pure and right and the most beneficial for oneself and all around one, one's whole environment. Now, meditation is that activity of the whole person by which this finds expression. And it is summed up in that wonderful term samasati, perfect mindfulness. This perfect mindfulness is free of the domination of time, space. This perfect mindfulness becomes, in its real fruition, the timeless state of communion, of samadhi. Samadhi, the supreme togetherness, the realized unity, the unitary wholeness of the entire cosmos, now finds unobstructed expression through you, the particular finite individual. This is the marvel of it. This which we call sati is not sufficiently appreciated, certainly not understood or seen in depth. The specific activity of meditation is mindfulness of a very intense nature. That is specific meditation. Samadhi, in that sense, is very, very intense. But it is nothing other than mindfulness. Our ordinary mindfulness with things and persons and so forth includes and is expressed through awareness of separate, finite persons, objects, events, conditions as they occur in our everyday life and reach us, reach the brain through the avenues of sense. But when this mindfulness becomes intense, the intenser it becomes, the more inclusive it becomes in terms of a unity, rather than in terms of separate persons or things to which we pay attention and are mindful of them. If we can see this, you will find that we become free of the subconscious influence inside us for grasping at this or grasping at that. How often we have considered this together. Why do we turn to religion? Why do we turn to Buddhism? Why do we get converted to Catholicism or Islam or anything? Because we want something for ourselves. Make no mistake about it. I love God so much, I'd give my whole life to God. But if God says, my dear fellow, go and clean out the lavatory, not exactly my business. What will the union say about it, their union? You won't obey God. You see? So, this grasping for self, this terrible, terrible separation of self and not self, bedevils our effort to live the religious life. Right at the source, all the time. And it is like the 9/10 of the iceberg. It is not seen by us. It is hidden. Hence its terrible power. But with right mindfulness as the starting point, in its intensification, the totality is realized without excluding anything at all. And this separation between the so-called conscious mind and the unconscious mind is completely out. The mind is one mind, the unified mind, the ekagata state, or the Sanskrit ekagrata, ekagrata. You see? So this is the meaning of meditation, which we must bear in mind. Now, as regards meditation subjects for today, we'll try and follow this sort of general idea for each day. We'll take a sila, one sila per day. That is the first subject of meditation. And we'll take harmlessness for today. You find harmlessness spoken of in detail in both the Digha Nikaya, in the Brahmajala Sutta, and in the Majjhima Nikaya, in the first volume. And the Buddha himself speaks. He says, this is from the Majjhima Nikaya, he, that is a monk, being one who has gone forth and who is endowed with the training and way of living of the monks, abandoning onslaught on creatures, is one who abstains from onslaught on creatures. The stick laid aside, the knife laid aside. Rhys Davids' translation in the Digha says, the cudgel and the sword. He, that is the monk, lives kindly, scrupulous, friendly, and compassionate towards all breathing things and creatures. When the Buddha extends this in the Majjhima discourse, he includes the plant kingdom also. Anything that is sensitive and that can feel, but perhaps he even included the stones and sand and the cosmic dust, be harmless towards it. Just try and sense this immeasurable love. It's utterly without sentimentality, no possessiveness, nothing grasped, everything allowed to be itself. Because he who has won the supreme freedom is the only one who can let others be free. He can never tyrannize over anything or anybody. That's the first subject, harmlessness then. The second subject is, will concern the five skandhas, rupa, shape or form. You see, that's the first skandha, as it is called, the constituents of the existential person. What is a man made up of? First item is form. Put away rupa, form, with right wisdom, teaches the Buddha. Now remember that rupa must not be confined to the physical body. feeling has a shape, thought has a shape. We talk of thought forms, for example. All these are shapes. They are rupa, the appearance. The appearance will arise. The actual concrete appearance of body will live for whatever number of years it lives, 70, 80, 90, 100 years, whatever it be. And a thought and a feeling come and go far more swiftly. You see? But they are all shapes. And the Buddha teaches, regard them thus. This is not mine. This am I not. This is not myself. Very significant sentences he uses. So, do not grasp it. Do not cling to it. Put it away with right wisdom, the Buddha teaches. What is the meaning of putting away with right wisdom? How do you put away a thought or a feeling? How do you put away your own physical body, the concrete form, without which you, the particular person, are not at all? The meaning is simply this. See clearly the thing as it arises, watch it as it changes, this is being mindful, watch it as it passes away. But in its coming to birth, its proceeding, and in its dying, have neither attachment nor aversion towards it. Neither grasp it or cling to it saying, this is good. Because you will always say that in relation to your own self. It's an act which is full of selfness, grasping for self. This is good. Good for me. I'll have it. No. Just let be. See it coming to being, proceeding, dying. On the other hand, if you dislike it, or if you see that it is evil in itself, don't attempt to be rid of it, to destroy it, because nothing can be destroyed, nothing can be annihilated, everything can be transformed. You cannot annihilate anything. So don't fight against it. Resist not evil, said Jesus. Now you'll understand. You see? Do not fight against it. Just observe it without aversion. No grasping. Because if you have aversion for something, it will grasp you. Watch people's behavior when a bee comes buzzing by or a wasp near them. So put it away with right wisdom. Now for those of you who are interested in the Tibetan presentation and the Tibetan teachings, there are the five Dhyani Buddhas, as they are called. Transcendental personifications of archetypal forms of the creative energy as it functions through us as limited human beings. Each of those archetypal forms is associated with the five skandhas. The five Dhyani Buddhas are associated with the five skandhas, you see, and they have been given names. And on the board is all that needs to be told at the moment. So you can copy that down. And according to your natural urge and inclination through the day, take up these meditation subjects. Preferably, if you can do all three, better. But if you can't do all three, do what you can do. Don't say, I've got to do this. This is my homework. I'm no schoolmaster setting you homework. In any case, I don't charge any fees, as you know. So don't neglect, therefore, what is suggested to you. No, look, any questions, write them down and hand them over to me. This is the actual, well, this I'll tell you straight away. This is just how it is taught. So now we'll stop there today, this morning. Just one suggestion. At coffee time, if you want to have coffee, if you must have coffee, have it. But remember, tea and coffee are stimulants. They are helpful sometimes and for some people. But the Buddha himself avoided all stimulants. And in our own day and age, Krishnamurti, for example, doesn't take tea and coffee even. Water is the best liquid to put inside the body. At 11:15, we'll meet here, and since today is a sunny day, we'll take advantage of the sunshine to practice a form of mindfulness which you may find interesting. I have called it meditative walking. So we'll meet here and proceed out from here, out into the open. I'll just say a few words to introduce the idea, the subject, and then we'll go out at 11:15. All right?